Welcome to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today is Gene McDonald. Gene, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It's really fun to be here.
Well, I hope it will be fun. The verdict is out yet, at least for you. I'll have fun, I'm sure. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
My current thing that I'm doing is I started a program called App Camp for Girls, which is a summer camp, week-long program to introduce girls 13 to 14 years old to the wonderful world of developing iPhone apps. Was inspired by the fact that there's practically no women creating iPhone apps today, or it's a very tiny percentage in the field, and it just seemed like, well, the one thing we could do is get more girls interested in at least checking out the field and finding out how much fun it is to make iPhone apps, because I think development and computer programming and such has come a long way since I was a girl, and there's a lot more fun things you can do these days than back in the day. Before that, I was the marketing director for Smile Software that makes PDF Pen and Text Expander, and I did that for about 10 years. So that's I've been pretty active in the Mac and iPhone developer community for about a decade.
Fantastic. And I am an avid Text Expander user and yes. Fully endorse App Camp for Girls because I think it's a great thing that you're doing. So keep up the good work.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome. But now, we're not here to talk about how you're trying to change the world.
No.
We are here to talk about something far more important, Star Trek. So would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I would. So I have been a Star Trek fan since it's been on the air. I am actually that old.
Someone just tweeted me and said, I want to hear an episode of Random Trek with someone who remembers when the original series was the only Star Trek you could watch.
Okay, this is it.
So what would you say your favorite series is?
My favorite series really is Voyager. I think the fact is that the original series is so old, you know, like myself. It's so old that if you watch it today, it's really hard to watch it, rewatch, you know, like the whole thing, I think, without getting very tired of just how much of a 1960s television thing it is, you know, at least. And so I wouldn't even say the original series is my second favorite one. I would say Next Generation is, something that I have to watch. But of course, I do have a very soft spot in my heart for the original series because that did introduce me to a lot of science fiction ideas that I didn't have, you know, going into it as a elementary school kid. I watched all the movies. I went to the movies when they came out. So those were original series movies, basically, you know, until you get to Generations, I guess. My theory is, because I've been thinking about it a lot, too. As you know, I've had some downtime recently with a back ailment, and I've had way more time on my hands than a person should have when a person has access to Netflix and Wikipedia and such. And so I've been thinking about, because I know your favorite series is Deep Space Nine, if
that
I'm
is
not
correct.
Mistaken, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that I liked Deep Space Nine. You know, I saw some of the episodes when it came out, but I didn't really follow it. I wasn't a person who watched TV on a regular night every night at that point in my life. And my opinion of Deep Space Nine wasn't that high until just the last couple of weeks where I said, well, I want to figure out why people say, like Scott says, that this is their favorite series because I don't see it, you know, in the first couple seasons. Oh, well. And what I realized is that you really do have to watch that series, you know, religiously from, you know, not beginning to end, at least from, you know, the middle of it to the end, because it tells a really epic story.
Yes.
And the story is good. So I could see where if you watch Deep Space Nine from the beginning to the end, you would really like it. And in my case, Voyager is the first series that I really watched from beginning to end. It was a few years ago, several years ago. I was out sick, and so there I was with Netflix and digging around. What am I going to watch? And I thought, Voyager. Now, I only saw some of the episodes while it was airing, but I never saw the original pilot. I really didn't know how did they get stuck out there in the Gamma Quadrant to begin with, or the Delta Quadrant. And so I started watching it from the beginning, and then I couldn't stop. And I watched the whole thing, the 7 seasons, over some period of time, more than a few days, I promise. And I think that when you watch something like that from beginning to end, you just start to appreciate better, like the character development and the story, lines that start to intertwine and the characters grow on you. And so Voyager is the first one that I watched from season 1 to season 7, and I do admit that obviously I think it's really cool that they had a female captain, and I really like Captain Janeway. And she's a kind of a role model. I mean, she has a way of being a strong leader and kicking butt when she has to, but still, she's a real person. I don't know. I think she's a very cool character. My theory is that, now that we have this ability to watch things from beginning to end, you things can grow on you in a way that might surprise you. And so I would say to all the Voyager haters out there, who can point to episodes here and there that they didn't like, but didn't actually watch the whole thing the whole way through, is maybe give it another chance and skip the most, horrible episodes that you can't stand, but watch the rest. And that's what I did with Deep Space Nine. I found a guide online that told me which episodes to definitely skip, so I didn't waste time on them and got myself right into the whole Dominion, Jem Hadar.
When it gets really good.
All that stuff. And I'm like, I never even knew about this stuff. So.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think the same holds true for both Voyager and The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, frankly. The first couple of seasons are a little rocky. But then once you get past them, they're good. And of course, the original series had, oddly enough, the opposite in that the first season is like, it is amazing how good so many of those episodes are.
Yes.
And then you get to the third season, and it's amazing how bad so many of these episodes are.
I know.
Which is a good segue, because, in fact, we did not get a Voyager episode, which would have made you happy. We didn't get a Deep Space Nine episode, which would have been happy for me. I mean, I'll watch any Star Trek, really. But we got an original series episode, which is generally a good thing. It's a season 3 original series episode, which you always have to look at and say, I don't know. It is The Mark of Gideon, which is season 3, episode 16, originally aired January 17th, 1969, for people who care about that. But the weird thing about Gideon is they won't let anyone scan the planet, and the Enterprise is there, basically, I guess, to kind of check it out, because they have they want to be part of the Federation, but they won't let anyone scan the planet. They won't let anyone go down on the planet. They won't send anyone off the planet.
Yeah.
And the Federation seems to be kind of okay with this, which is
weird. Yeah, okay. Tripping on the first thing, which doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah, it seems like that might be a red flag on your Federation application. We'd love to be part of your interplanetary government, but you can't visit us, you can't send anybody, we won't see you, and you can't scan us. But other than that, it should be fine. So they send they agree, okay, fine, you can send one person to the surface, and they can talk to our counselors and our ambassador and get this deal done. And it is never really explained why the Federation is so hot to have Gideon as part of it, but they are. So the one person that they will send is the world's best negotiator and diplomat, Captain Kirk. He just likes to punch people, but he's going down. And so he's no, and it is clear that none of the Enterprise crew is really excited to be here. They make that very clear. I don't understand why. But anyway, so Kirk beams down. They give him the coordinates for the council chamber. He beams down. Well, Spock beams him down. And so he rematerializes, and he's on the Enterprise and in the same transporter room that he just beamed from. And he's like, what the heck, Spock, what have you done? So he goes and to the little console and calls up Spock and says, hey, I'm still on the ship. What did you do? And Spock doesn't answer. And so Captain Kirk finds that odd. And so he starts walking through the halls, and the halls are empty. He goes to the bridge, and there's a really great shot of, you know, an empty Enterprise bridge, which you hardly ever see. And Captain Kirk appears, and it becomes clear that this Enterprise, or the Enterprise, because at the moment we don't know what this Enterprise is completely empty except for Captain Kirk. Which is really a great opening, I think.
It's a great opening. It's very spooky, and exactly. It appears he's on the Enterprise and everybody else disappeared.
Yeah, seemingly, he is the only person who has survived. Whatever has happened, everyone has gone away. And then it opened, and then that's the teaser. And you think to yourself, well, I am in for a great episode of Star Trek. And you soon find out maybe the rest of the episode cannot maintain the great opening. But I don't want to color anyone's opinions just yet. And so Kirk is running all over the place looking for people. He notices he has a bruise that he didn't have before, so he thinks, well, that's kind of odd. Spock is like, what? Spock gets a call from the ambassador, and the ambassador says, hey, we thought you were beaming down Captain Kirk. Where is he? And Spock says, he should be with you because we beamed him down there. And the ambassador's like, oh, dear. He didn't show up. There must be some kind of malfunction. And so Spock's like, all right, well, we'll come down. Or actually, he says, well, let us just scan your planet, because that seems reasonable. And the ambassador says, no. And then he's like, all right, well, let's go down there. And the ambassador says, no, we can't let. There's a lot of Spock and the ambassador talking to one another.
Yes.
Trying, like, diplomatically engaging in a little wordplay in this episode, which I found a little tedious, but
yes.
And then the ambassador's like, no one else can come on the planet. We're very strict rules about this. And then cut back to Captain Kirk on a seemingly empty starship, except for someone who we find out her name is O'Donna, and she is dancing down the corridors in one of these typical Star Trek original series costumes that leaves little to the imagination.
See, I would disagree about the costume. I think she got the worst costume ever of a Star Trek babe.
You think this is a bad costume?
It's ugly. It's not really that sexy. I mean, like, if you compare, like, pretty much any other, even the Starfleet uniform is hotter than this costume that she has on, except that it's, you know, semi-revealing. But
yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's kind of revealing, but there are a lot of layers, and there's like a weird kind of cape thing going on. It's not the best work that they did, but it's certainly alien, I guess.
Well, she obviously, yeah. I mean, so far we've seen aliens in very bad fashion.
It's true.
I mean, you have to admit that these are kind of some of the worst alien like fashion choices ever made in the original series.
Yeah, the ambassador and his crew, or I guess his council members, are wearing like weird. Well, they're wearing jumpsuits, but they have like these honeycomb overlay kind of things on them.
They look like Halloween costumes for little kids. But
Yeah, the Gideons are not great at costumes, apparently, is what we find out. Maybe that's why they want to join the Federation, because they want access to some fashion, off-world fashion. And we find out when we see even more, we will see how they're unimaginative with their fashion choices. And so Kirk is like, hey, what the heck? Who are you? And she's like, oh, I'm just enjoying all this space because I am unused to it. And he's like, well, where did you must have come from Gideon. And she says, I don't know where I came from. What's Gideon? I just remember thousands of bodies pressing upon me, and then I was here. Which seems very strange, but Kirk is like, okay, whatever. I'll take it. I don't care. We'll explore the rest of the ship together. Then we cut back to, which is clearly, and so now once we've seen, I should point out that Spock and the rest of the crew, when we cut back to them earlier, are clearly on the original Enterprise, and so we know that Captain Kirk must be somewhere else. We don't know where he is, but he's on a different Enterprise. And so then we cut back, and Spock is like, Uhura, call up Starfleet and tell them that we are going to, we basically want to do something. We want to beam down there, even though the Federation doesn't want us to, which I thought it was an interesting, because you don't really see a lot in Star Trek where Starfleet and Federation, the Federation are, chafing against one another. And Spock is very clearly unhappy that the Federation is very interested in getting Gideon and doesn't want to break any of these rules. So that was interesting. Another kind of interesting tidbit in a kind of not so interesting episode.
Well, I think it's interesting how Spock is like, I mean, he takes these pot shots at the whole idea of diplomacy. You know, he's very cranky about, you know, that's where he says, like, you know, diplomacy's purpose is to prolong a crisis, you know, or bureaucrats and diplomats, you know, have different jobs, but they achieve the same thing. And there, he's really, I thought it was a little weirdly out of character, actually, because he is Spock. And presumably, you know, he is himself like kind of a product of diplomacy, that he's even in Starfleet. And then eventually we know he becomes Ambassador Spock at some point.
That's true.
So.
And the Vulcans are generally known in the Star Trek universe as being very diplomatic. Like people go to them to solve their crises. And Spock is all like, damn it. I don't care what Federation has. Diplomacy sucks. And I want to just beam down there and find Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
It is a very strange thing. Spock is not happy. And Uhura is not happy because she's like, no one's answering. And Spock's like, damn it, keep asking. back on the other Enterprise, Captain Kirk figures out that he is missing 9 minutes in between when he beamed down to what he thought was Gideon and when he appeared in this on the Enterprise, or reappeared back on the Enterprise. And he has a bruise, as I mentioned earlier. So things are weird. And continuing to be weird is O'Donna and Captain Kirk's relationship. They seem to very quickly become infatuated with one another.
Yeah.
Which it seems weird, but...
Kirk has this incredible ability to just turn off the crisis at hand and be all like, you know, like engaging, charming, you know, and flirtatious when he should be like freaking out that where is his crew, and I just switched us out of warp drive, but it doesn't seem, you know, like I don't know where the viewer says we are. I don't know this quadrant, and but let me just like, you know, settle in and have some, you know, flirtatious chit chat with this total stranger.
Yeah, he seems quite okay with the fact that they are on this empty starship. I mean, he wants to find an answer, but he's like, we can take our time. And I thought it was weird. So they drop out of warp, and O'Donnell's like, where are we? And so he turns on the view screen, and he's like, I'm unfamiliar with these stars. And I thought to myself, well, you're on a starship. Why don't you use the computer and figure out where you are?
I thought the same thing. I was like, so normally he can look at that viewer and know where he is just by looking at the stars, because
that's how they
navigate. That's a lot of star systems to know. You know, like I have a hard time just with like, you know, the Earth's like, you know, astronomy and finding zodiac signs up there. But apparently he can look at the window and tell where he is in the galaxy.
It's impressive. That's Captain Kirk. Yes. He has many talents. He's very good at seducing people, and he can navigate by sight through the galaxy. And that's why he's a captain.
Right.
And so then the Gideon ambassador calls up to Spock and says, Spock, I have great news. And Spock is like, fantastic. What's the news? And he says, well, we did a very thorough search. I mean, this is the most thorough search ever, Spock. And Captain Kirk's not here.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. You don't need to check it out. Nothing suspicious.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm paraphrasing.
You can just concentrate on everything else and forget about Gideon. Just forget about us.
I'm sure
he's suspicious at all.
Yeah, exactly. And I know I'm paraphrasing, but it's totally super suspicious the way he says it. He's like, you can just rule out the planet, take our word for it. Captain Kirk must be somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this, like, so, I mean, the whole show is, you know, where Kirk is and then where Spock is, for pretty much going back and forth. And, yep. You know, it's a bad show when you look forward to the parts where they're back on the Enterprise with Spock and away from the action on the duplicate Enterprise. But one of the things about that ambassador, the Gideon ambassador, he's probably one of the more annoying aliens ever written, and the crew finds him really annoying too. And they, you know, like where that moment where Uhura goes like something like, "It's maddening. I don't see how you can take it, Mr. Spock," you know, because he's all full of doublespeak, and you know, and of course Scotty too is like, "Yeah, he's turning whatever you say turns your words around," you know, and so that is the action. You know, that is going on in that scene, which is how annoying the alien guy is.
And that scene is interesting because they, and Bones, of course, also chimes in and says, you know, this guy's giving us the runaround. And they, I find it fascinating, they do all of this while the ambassador is still on the view screen and he's hearing what they say.
Right.
You would think.
But then he pretends not to have really heard it because
he's a diplomat.
He's a diplomat. And I love the one time where he says, like, I couldn't follow what your excitable repairman was saying, referring to Scotty as the repairman.
And that's what Spock says, Scotty, maybe you should leave.
Yeah, he did.
And for some reason, I don't know if this was true, but they showed a close-up of Scotty, and he looked like he had a super tan. I don't know what was going on there, but maybe James Doohan was out tanning before this episode, but... It was a little odd. I was watching with my wife, and she was like, "What is wrong with his coloring?" I was like, "I don't know, but he's got a tan or something." So, yeah, Spock and the ambassador go back and forth. Everyone expresses their disgust with the ambassador. Spock says, "Okay, how about you beam someone up so that we can prove that our transporter works, and then we'll beam one person down, and it'll be okay." And so the ambassador's like, okay, fine. So they beam up some random flunky, and he gets there, and everything's fine. And Spock's like, great, now I can beam down. And the ambassador's like, about that. I overstepped my permissions, and really, I can't let you do that. So, sorry, Spock. Spock is like, oh, diplomacy sucks. I'll tell you something that doesn't suck, Spock. This episode of Random Trek has a sponsor. Not only does it have a sponsor, it's our first returning sponsor. He defeated the Klingons. He suffered the wrath of Khan. And he commanded the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. But for his next mission, Captain Kirk wants you to be a member of his crew. William Shatner has just launched his very first Kickstarter project to create his new book, Catch Me Up. And you can be a special part of this project by going to Kickstarter now and becoming a backer. Catch Me Up seeks to empower 1 million people to try new things, accept new challenges, and catch up with the latest technology. He's launched this project on Kickstarter so you, his friends, can be part of this important mission. And you do not want to reject a mission from Captain Kirk. So go to Kickstarter.com, type in Catch Me Up, or go to CatchMeUp.com, and choose from rewards like autographed copies of the book, T-shirts, and even the opportunity to spend an evening with the captain himself. It's Catch Me Up, the new book by William Shatner, available only at Kickstarter.com. And now back to the wacky Mark of the Gideon.
You know, and I think it's important to mention now that beaming somebody up from Gideon also requires this, like, completely out of ordinary discussion of what the coordinates are.
Yes, coordinates are very important because I guess this is, once again, you know, I make up reasons for things. I'm assuming that the Gideons, since you can't scan the planet because right. they have shielding, so I guess they need to give you precise coordinates because you can't just scan and beam someone.
Oh, well,
out.
That's true. You're right. It's not quite, you know. But you definitely notice it, you know, if you've watched any other Star Trek, they never sit around, you know, it's like giving out phone numbers.
It's true. Yeah, just text me. What's your number? Yeah, it's weird. And you would think that, so given the coordinates, they have to give the flunkies coordinates so he can beam up. And the flunky is in the council chamber, which is where Captain Kirk was supposed to beam to. And so they had coordinates. They made a big deal about the coordinates they gave to Captain Kirk. You would think that they could map the planet even roughly and establish the coordinate system and realize that they beamed Captain Kirk somewhere completely different than the council chamber. Spoiler alert. because they know for a fact that the flunky dude they beamed up was in the council chamber. But they don't do that.
No.
But that's just me being crazy and applying a little logic to a wacky episode of Star Trek. And so we go back to the other Enterprise where Captain Kirk and O'Donna are quickly falling in love, apparently. And Captain Kirk can't get anyone to... And they have a nice transition here where Uhura says Enterprise to Starfleet, and then they cut to Captain Kirk doing the exact same thing there, which I thought was a great little transition.
That was a good transition. That was one of the better production moments of the show.
It's true. So, you know, kudos to whoever figured that out. And then he can't get it to work. They drop out of warp, he thinks, but instead of continuing investigating, he and O'Donna decide that it would be a great time to make out, and so they do. And they do not look at the view screen, and we see appearing on the view screen a bunch of weird heads in, like, green
faces.
Green faces, yes, all peering in. And Captain Kirk and O'Donna do not look behind them and walk out of the bridge, not seeing these people watching them.
Yes.
In a stranger part of this episode. It's
one of the creepier moments of Star Trek ever, I would say.
I think that is right. This episode overall is pretty creepy. And then, so Kirk and O'Donna start thinking, well, maybe we'll just stay on the Enterprise forever together because there's plenty of food. And energy is not a problem, which I think, you know, speaking about Spock's reaction being out of character, Captain Kirk considering just staying the rest of his life on this empty Enterprise seems a little out of character for him.
Yeah.
Even though he's with a lovely lady.
Well, yeah. So he wouldn't be considering it at all, obviously, otherwise. But I sort of read that like he was like, that was part of his flirtation.
Then they hear a weird noise. And Captain Kirk is like, what is that noise? Did you hear that? And she says, yeah, isn't that the engines? We're on a starship. It's got engines. And Captain Kirk says, I know every much like I know every star in the galaxy, I know every single sound that the Enterprise could possibly make. And that is not one of them. And she's like, oh, all right, well. And he says, let's go to a viewport and see what's out there. So they run off to a viewport. It doesn't work when he tries to open it, and then he fiddles around with something. And suddenly it opens, and we don't see stars. We see a bunch of creepy people looking in jumpsuits again. And then it switches to a starfield.
Yeah.
He's like, what the heck is that? And this is where Captain Kirk thinks, all right, there are lots of people out there, so the sound that we are hearing must be all of their heartbeats.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense.
Nah, I mean, but it is the time when he realizes, like, this duplicate Enterprise is probably not out in space.
That's true. He puts it together. But yeah, I mean, because the sound starts and then it stops.
Yes.
So I unless everyone died, which they don't, spoiler alert, that's a weird theory. But anyway, he's like, O'Donna, damn it, you know what's going on. Tell me what's going on. And so she faints because that's what you do when you're a woman in the 60s, I guess. And because she says, oh, I feel ill. And then she faints and Captain Kirk picks her up. And as he's picking her up, the ambassador comes in with two guards And we find out, oh no, this was all a ruse so that they could get Captain Kirk on their planet and make O'Donnell sick.
Yeah. And just to go back to the kind of peeping Tom aspect of these aliens, the ambassador and his buddies are watching Kirk and O'Donnell. Who knows how much of everything they've been watching, but they're definitely shown watching them when she starts to feel sick and he picks her up in his arms. And, that's how they've been watching.
They have. I assume they've been watching creepily the entire time.
Yeah.
I assume the whole planet is watching, which is very weird. yeah. And then that's when she collapses, he's like, all right, we've got to go in there for some reason. So they go in there. And this is when the ambassador explains, this is all our plan because we want to make O'Donnell sick because nobody on this planet can get sick and it's totally overpopulated. And you're going to stay here forever and allow us to kill ourselves somehow and help with our overpopulation. I don't know. And then they take Kirk prisoner and... then there's this weird thing where the ambassador asks his daughter, he's like, do you feel pain? And she says, yes. And he's like, well, what does it feel like? Because I've never felt pain. And she goes and gives this big explanation about basically pain is when you fall in love with someone, but you can't, you're separated with them, i.e. I fall in love with Captain Kirk and now I'm separated from him. And that is what pain feels like. And then I turned to my wife and said, geez, these people fall in love very quickly. They have known each other for like 40 minutes at most. And she's totally in love with Captain Kirk.
Yeah. I don't think that would be the first time in Star Trek that somebody fell in love with Captain Kirk that quickly or vice versa.
It is true. He is a rapscallion.
Yeah.
And so then Spock is still like... trying to get down there. And so he finally hooks up to an admiral, and the admiral's like, well, Spock, I'm not happy, but the Federation won't let us let you beam down there because they are very interested in having this planet and we don't want to start a war. And it's unclear to me how the Gideons have – there's no evidence that they've ever left their planet, so – what is they don't have spaceships apparently, so I don't know how this war would happen, but
well, we don't know what they have.
And that's true. They're a mysterious race who never lets anyone visit.
Yeah.
But boy, we want them in the Federation. So basically he says, listen, Spock, don't do anything. If we need to write off Captain Kirk, he doesn't say that, but it's implied, well, so be it. That's the risk of being a captain.
He's like, I mean, do you have any actual evidence that Kirk is in danger?
Which is true.
And Spock is like, he's not around.
We don't know where he is. That's and they won't let us scan the planet. So that seems suspicious.
Yeah.
Then Captain Kirk decides, well, I need to get to O'Donnell. So he gets in a fist fight with the guards. And this is another quibble I have. So the ambassador makes it seem like they never experience pain. Then the guards get punched and stuff, and they clearly are experiencing pain. So I think that these people can experience pain.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's weird. And so Spock says, well, to heck with the orders. I'm beaming to the coordinates that we beamed Captain Kirk to. And Dr. McCoy's like, well, you should take me. And Scotty's like, I'll go with you too. And Spock says, no, it's too dangerous. We'll just beam me down and see what happens.
Well, he says, I don't want to get you in trouble with Starfleet. I can only do this, you know, be responsible for myself getting into trouble with Starfleet. Because that's kind of a theme too, is how Spock is trying to play within the rules. But Starfleet and the Federation are so... dumb about this whole thing that he has to now do something they told him not to do.
Right. He doesn't want to do it, but
yeah,
diplomacy has failed because it's stupid. So he says, no, you guys stay here. Captain and McCoy's like, this is how we got into this mess, sending one person down there by themselves.
He says, I'll be right back.
Yeah, and he's like, where have you heard that before?
That's exactly what they say.
And Spock's like, trust me, everybody chill out. And so Spock beams down to the planet, and he beams to this duplicate Enterprise that the Gideons have created. And this is another question. How did they get an exact... How do they know exactly down to what's in Captain Kirk's quarters? Is a question I have. But because I imagine you could probably buy on the black market in the Starfleet universe, like the blueprints to a Constitution starship. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to know what's in Captain Kirk's quarters. Right. But they seem to be able to have a perfect replica. At least a replica good enough to fool Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Because as we find out, Spock spends about 30 seconds on this. And he's like, none of this works. This is clearly a replica.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how come Captain Kirk didn't notice this? But he didn't. So Spock knows something's up. And this is when we get the exposition, I can speak, where Captain Kirk is like, well, what happened? When you filled out the form to be part of the Federation, you said that this planet was a paradise. Nobody ever got sick. There was lots of culture, lots of open spaces and parks. And the ambassador's like, well, that was true hundreds of years ago, but it is true that we have no disease on this planet, and our bodies regenerate at an amazing rate. So, you know, we just kept having more people, and the birth rate accelerated, which is generally not what happens when you have overpopulation, but that's okay. And so they just keep having babies, and nobody dies, basically. And so now you've got people everywhere, and this is where they show... they're in the council room, and then they kind of pan up, and you can see like there's a window that wasn't in view of the view screen, and you see like maybe 20 people in these stupid jumpsuits all kind of shimmying against each other as though they're all just crowded in one little corridor.
Yeah, and this I have to say, like when you assigned me this episode of Star Trek, and I was trying to remember, have I ever seen this one? You know, that made such an impression on me as a kid that this was our future, you know, if we didn't solve the population problem, which was a big thing, you know, that people talked about back then, that we would be in rooms in jumpsuits bumping into a bunch of other people. We wouldn't even be able to sit down. We would it'd be like being in a really crowded train station or something. I don't know. But yeah, the fact that they have a window onto that from their council room is also very weird, obviously. It's exposition. It's an exposition point.
That's right. It's an exposition portal. And this is – so I don't think this is a good episode of Star Trek, but it is approaching a big problem, right? Overpopulation,
yes.
As you were saying at that point, was a big thing. People were – and we're still worried about it now. And Captain Kirk, when he hears about this and says, well, why don't you try – the methods that, you know, we do to limit population. He doesn't say contraceptive, but that's basically what he's saying.
No, he does say safe methods of avoiding conception.
Yes.
So he doesn't say contraception, but he says conception.
Basically, that's what he's going for. And he says, what about sterilization? These kinds of things. So, you know, the Federation will give you this technology if you don't have it now to help solve the problem. We're done. Which I thought, you know, that could be a very controversial statement.
I think it was. I mean, I think that is probably like in a nutshell why this is an important episode of Star Trek, mm-hmm. even if it's kind of tedious to watch. But at that point, that's Star Trek saying something, you know, about the social problems, you know, in 1968 or 69 that other television shows could not really deal with. And, showing like this eventuality of a planet that's just covered with people, because they talk about it like that it's encased in, I think he says encased in humanity, which they're not humans, but whatever. they're the most human looking aliens, I think we.
They are pretty much humans.
This is a very low budget episode, but yes.
It is. And so he says, I wrote this down because I thought this was really good. He says, Gideon is encased in a living mass who can find no rest, no happiness. It was very kind of, you know, certainly if you're thinking about overpopulation, it's a chilling description of what could happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy. And yeah, so I think you're right. This is one of those episodes where All right, the story is kind of stupid, and it is tedious. There's lots of dead, you know, like O'Donna and Kirk looking at each other for no particular reason and talking about bruises. But they are addressing big societal issues, right, like head on. And they can do that because they have this lens of, well, these aren't – this isn't Earth. We're on another planet, and these are aliens, clearly, you know.
Yeah.
This is just fiction. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And so the ambassador's like, well, why don't you stay, Kirk, and we can farm you for this virus that we need that will let us let people die. And Kirk is like, I'd rather not stay here for the rest of my life. And we need to save O'Donna because she's going to die, and I guess I love her or something.
Yeah.
And so just as he's going to run to get O'Donna, Spock shows up and proving that the Gideons have very poor guards. He just kind of slowly walks up behind one, does the old nerve pinch. He's out.
They weren't expecting anybody because they had that whole thing with the coordinates. They didn't.
Well,
they thought
true.
They had people tricked. You know,
they were probably overwhelmed because this is the first time in their life that they've been in a hallway without like 400 other people.
Yeah.
So they weren't looking around. So yeah, Spock knocks one guy out, and then in a stunning display of strength, he like throws the other guard way down the hallway. And they rescue Kirk, and Kirk goes and gets O'Donna. They beam up. They cure O'Donna, and she's like, oh, you should still come down to Gideon, and we can live together. And he says no, and they beam her down. And that's the end of the episode.
That is the end.
We have no idea if Gideon has been part of the Federation or not. I would assume not, since they kidnapped Captain Kirk, but I don't know.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, because they, I mean, the solution that they've hit on for dealing with their overpopulation problem, which, you know, making people sick so they die,
right,
doesn't seem like a really good solution either in terms of like how would this be executed. And I mean, the ambassador even says like, oh, O'Donna has to die, so she's an example, so that, you know, he says like, you know, so our young people will volunteer. And I'm like, why do the young people have to volunteer?
Because they have less to give to Gideon society.
Yeah. And you know, the logistics of how they're going to solve their problem, you're left not really, you know, feeling like they've got much of a handle on it.
Yeah. And you think, you know, if they can quickly put together a comprehensive fake mock-up of the Enterprise, you would think that they could come up with a better idea than trying to kill people off with some random disease that they didn't even know if Captain Kirk had or not. But luckily,
no, they knew. I don't know how they knew it, because they never leave the planet, but he said our prime minister learned of this when we were, you know, about joining the Federation.
Because that's,
and I'm like, so they discussed the medical history of like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I'm glad you're interested in joining the Federation. By the way, Captain Kirk, who you've never met, has this disease, FYI.
Yeah. So that, I mean, it does. I mean, obviously there's a zillion plot holes in this episode, but the biggest one seems to me that like all they needed was some of Captain Kirk's blood.
Yes, I was thinking several times.
And he was willing to go down there, so it's not like they couldn't have gotten some blood from him surreptitiously or even unsurreptitiously, since obviously they didn't have a problem with like causing a big kerfuffle by making him disappear. I don't know. Their grasp of biology is kind of weak.
Yes. And they did have him for those 9 minutes between when he beamed down and I guess they knocked him out and bruised him or something. So they could have just taken his blood and then he could have woken up in the council chamber and they would have been like, oh, you slipped on something as you were beaming in or something. Sorry about that. And then he would have never known. And then they could have killed people at their will.
Yeah. But so that I think is the problem with this this episode ultimately is that it uses this great idea of a totally exact replica of the Enterprise, and it's a waste of that idea.
Yeah, it doesn't live up to that teaser. Because, boy, you think that's a deserted Enterprise. What's going to happen? Oh, of course, population. Overpopulation is the theme. That's very strange.
Yeah.
Overall, what do you think of this episode?
I think if you've never seen it, it's interesting to watch it once. And mainly because of the kind of humor comedy relief of Spock and the rest of the crew dealing with ambassadors and Federation problems and everything. You know, they're very cranky up there, and they don't you don't usually see the senior officers bitching like that.
It's true. They're usually off doing solving problems, but they're like, oh, yeah. Red tape. I hate it.
As episodes of the original series go, I'm sure it's in nobody's top anything. but it wasn't my top, 10 episodes I remembered as a kid. Because I didn't really care about the holes in the plot when I'm like 8 or 9 years old.
Right.
I care about, well, here's this lady with this really, flashy outfit, and here's these people who are in these rooms, like they have no room to, they can't even move around. And that was kind of scary to me. Then that made an impression on my childhood imagination. So I think as a kid, I remember the episode being much better because it had this twist that was really relevant and scary.
Yes. So this, I think, overall, it's an important episode because it has an important message. But I wish it were better to deliver that message. And I wish that the empty Enterprise, much like you said, Gene, was in a much better episode, because that's a great idea. Oh, well, they can't all be good.
No. And I think this is like a good example of why it's hard to watch the original series like the way you would watch the more modern series, in big chunks, because the episodes don't necessarily build on each other, and you can skip around a lot, and you don't miss very much, I don't think, if you do that. And you have to be able to watch a lot of bad sets, and costumes it's not as engaging, I don't find, unless you're really into, if you just find that cheesy, what we now consider kind of cheesy, TV to be fun to watch. That's one reason to watch it. But I don't find it like, it doesn't suck me in. I mean, I tried to start watching it from episode one through and to watch all three seasons. And I just got, I lost my interest because, I'd skip around to what the episodes I knew were really good.
Well, Gene, thank you for joining me. And hopefully you'll come back again, and maybe we won't get a third season original series episode, but I can make no promises.
I know you can't promise anything, but I can. I can promise that if you invite me again, I would love to be back on Random Trek.
Next on Random Trek, The Next Generation's Pen Pals.